This is an encore edition of Call the Roll, first broadcast April 5th, 2014. Hello, and thank you for listening to Call the Roll, a public affairs program produced by the Columbus City Council and aired here on Freedom FM. I'm your host, John Ivanic, communications instructor for the Columbus City Council on this week's show, Passing the Capital Budget and Investing in the Travel and Tourism Industry. We begin this week with the Columbus City Council passing a capital improvements budget that includes $735 million for new infrastructure and facility projects, with an unprecedented investment of $33 million for street resurfacing and more than $42.5 million in Columbus Recreation and Parks infrastructure, including pools, parks, playgrounds, and bikeways. Other funded priorities include $8 million in improvements to central city neighborhoods through the Urban Infrastructure Improvement Fund, $6 million in fire apparatus, and $5 million to replace the fire station at 150 East Fulton Avenue, some $4.2 million for street lighting, and $2.5 million to support the Vacant and Abandoned Properties Program, which rehabs properties that can be saved and demolishes those that are beyond repair. Here's City Council's Finance Committee Chair, Priscilla R. Tyson.
This ordinance establishes a 2014 capital improvements budget, or known as the CIB. The budget represents a plan for the expenditure of monies in 2014 for a variety of capital improvements projects. Excuse me. This new funding is totaled for $735.6 million. $247 million represents additional capacity from the special income tax fund, known as the SIT, and $460 million of this amount, where nearly 62% is supported by the enterprise revenues and miscellaneous other small revenues, such as internal service fees, federal and state funding sources, and not the set aside of income tax dollars. Collectively, the CIB includes new investments that will improve our roads, bridges, sidewalks, and other critical public infrastructure. It has an unprecedented $33 million investment in road resurfacing. This budget also funds other major construction projects like the demolition and development taking place at 109 North Front Street. The CIB also includes funding that will equip our safety forces with the tools they need to improve their effectiveness. It invests in our recreation facilities and public spaces, which is right now we have an unprecedented amount of dollars that will be going to recreation and parks. It adds street lights. It also continues to add funding to demolish vacant and abandoned properties. It also supports our quality of life by supporting the arts. I like to note that $7.3 million of the $735.6 million is new funding by this council through the amendments of this council, and will focus on home repair, pothole repair, public safety, snow removal, recreation parks, and accessibility for the disabled. Ultimately, the capital improvements budget is about leveraging dollars and helping communities to thrive by strengthening neighborhoods, fortifying our safety forces, and economic expansion. I'm proud to have had the opportunity to serve our residents through this budget process. I also like to thank this council, each member and their staff, the mayor and his administration, and all the city departments and the directors. I especially want to thank Finance Director Paul Rakowski and his team, Rob Newman and Kyle Sieverhart, as well as Mr. Auditor Dorian. Additionally, I want to thank the Legislative Research Office staff, Kate Pashotti and Brian Clark, and also my staff, Jason Powell and Hosanna, as well as the Columbus residents for your work and your commitment to making investments that will allow our community to continue to thrive. And with that, I am going to, are there any questions or comments? Then I'm going to open the floor. We have some public speakers that want to come in and speak on the capital budget. First is Chip Sant. He's the vice chair for the Public Art Commission. Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks so much. It's a privilege to serve on the Columbus Art Commission, and I'm just here to speak in support. There is some small amount of funding that is a huge step forward in promoting the arts, which have economic value to the community, cultural value. So it's very exciting. The mayor's leadership and in the executive order, as well as your leadership in providing funding is terrific, so thanks. The Art Commission has worked on a couple of public art projects, some of which may be slightly more controversial than others, but it moves us forward. There's also maintenance money, working with the Parks and Recreation to maintain the Schiller Art, the Schiller Park statue, et cetera. So I'm just here to simply say thank you.
Columbus is once again being named a top 7 intelligent community and is gunning to be number 1. The Intelligent Community Forum is a New York-based international think tank, research organization, publisher, and social enterprise group that studies the world's cities to discover and then share the strategies used to create an intelligent community. During a visit by the group, city leaders highlighted COSI, Nationwide Children's Hospital, the IBM Analytics Center, and the Columbus Idea Foundry. For the winning city, there's not only bragging rights, but a significant amount of public and business interest in that community. President Pro Tem A. Troy Miller spoke during a public reception at the Art Gallery about what he thinks it takes for Columbus to be an intelligent community.
One of the things I've been doing for the past couple years on City Council is to support small businesses no matter what size. My belief is that one idea like Microsoft years ago or Oracle can be born right here in the city of Columbus. But it takes that one person with that one team to make that happen, and you have to start today. So I'm excited to be here tonight because more and more of the world is recognizing what we already know about Columbus, that we are innovative and an intelligent city. We welcome the judge for the world's most intelligent community because they have indeed found all those characteristics right here in the city of Columbus. This innovation and creation is from our hospitals to our learning and research centers throughout the area. We displayed innovation not through just Battelle, but also through our other universities throughout the area. So let me paraphrase Steve Jobs. Columbus is the yardstick of quality and excellence by which others can be measured. So I welcome the Intelligent Community Forum and everyone who is here tonight to celebrate yet another great element of Columbus, Ohio, and that's innovation. Thank you. Now, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce the Chief Information Officer for the City of Columbus, Director Gary Cavan. Come on up, Gary. And this is very important. Gary has been very important of making sure that Columbus has a robust fiber network throughout the city. Now,
it's okay.
Okay. Now, that is so important to me because, of course, I say this almost every council meeting, that fiber is our fourth utility. It is the future, and the future is already here now. And this man has been instrumental in making that happen. Gary?
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Miller. President Pro Tem, for those kind words. Thank all of you for being here. It seems like only yesterday we were here. Here we are again. Before I get started, I have to recognize a few people, otherwise I will be in some serious trouble. Promise to be brief, but you know, anytime something like this takes place, there are people behind the scenes that do so much but get so little recognition. So I want to recognize those people today. One of them is Jeanette King. If any of you have ever met Jeanette King, she's my administrator, and she is the best administrator in the world, bar none. Stephanie Harper, all of her hard work behind the scenes, making all this happen. Paul Carlson. Paul Carlson was instrumental in doing the application. Paul, raise your hand. And then I have two very good deputy directors, Jim Bodai and Moe Shaboni. Are you guys out there? I also want to thank the Greatest Museum of Art for allowing us to be here. Thank you. Or Columbus Museum. I'm sorry. Thank you for allowing us to be here. Appreciate it. Here we are again. Out of hundreds of applicants around the world, Columbus again was chosen to be one of the top seven cities in the world as an intelligent community. Top seven in the world. Now, last year, we were the only city in the United States. They snuck another one in on us this year, so it's two out of the United States, the rest are abroad. Last year's theme was workforce development and education. This year's theme is culture and art. Even though the themes have changed, we have been able to be successful both years. And while technology plays a very important role, broadband specifically, it's not the only thing. What they're looking for is how do you intertwine broadband into your community to enhance and improve the lives of your residents. So over the next 2 years, or in the next several weeks, there will be some judging that will take place. I tell you why I believe we are number one. We have strong leadership, the mayor, business leaders, civic leaders, community leaders. We also have strong cooperation. And the one thing I've heard over and over again throughout our travels, I think Mr. Young, who's following me, will attest to, we have strong collaboration. And that's very important. If the mayor were here, he would say we have our swag. The city has swag. I heard Doug Kreiler say something today that has resonated. He said it's our time. It is our time. So I don't know what next year's theme is going to be. I hope I don't have to find out, because I hope the next time we get together, we're going to be celebrating being number one in the world. Thank you.
A large group of international experts will review the written submissions from communities, plus the reports by the co-founders of the community visits. Then in New York City in June, the annual Intelligent Community Forum Summit will be announced, the 2014 Intelligent Community. Travel and tourism industry is an important economic driver in the local economy, producing some $7.8 billion in spending and providing one in every 12 salary jobs. In an ongoing effort to sustain and grow the industry, the City Council is investing more money in Experience Columbus. That's the region's Visitors and Convention Bureau. Council members have voted to provide the group their portion of the hotel-motel tax, or some $8.2 million for 2014. Experience Columbus's Brian Ross explains the impact of the investment on his group and Columbus.
Anytime we get the opportunity to come down and share the importance of the tourism industry on our economy, is a great opportunity for us. Experience Columbus and the Greater Columbus Sports Commission are engaged in many bold initiatives right now, and we couldn't do it without the active engagement of all of you and the mayor and also our county commissioners. As I look around the council here, I know that we've had events over the last month, and we've seen each and every one of you at every event helping sell our city to these wonderful conventions we're working on bringing in. Some of the key major groups we're looking at is the International Federation of Library Associations, National Urban League, Full Gospel Baptist, and the International City County Management Association, just to name a few of the large conventions we're working on securing for our community. And also, we're continuing to serve great customers. I'm sure just this month, most people knew that the Arnold Sports Festival was in town, which created a lot of traffic jams. That's good for us. That means there's a lot of people in our city spending a lot of money. In addition, with the Sports Commission, Linda refers to it as the finals for Ohio High School basketball and wrestling, and I think fencing, a few other finals that come through as well. So it's definitely a big month for her. Obviously, Linda, the executive director of the Sports Commission, and her team are doing a tremendous job. And we also want to say that with you as a consistent partner, we've been able to also get new partners involved with all the tremendous things that are happening in our city. As many of you have seen, the state of Ohio just proposed new investment in the facilities at the Ohio Expo Center. And that's important to us to help retain and grow key groups such as the Quarter Horse Congress and also the Arnold Sports Fitness Weekend. In addition to that, the riverfront's being transformed. Our zoo is about to open the Heart of Africa exhibit in May, which is a very exciting time for us. So it's a great time to be in Columbus. But as you know, it's not just about all the big bids. It's not just about the RNC, DNC. It's not just about the women's Final Four. It's also about how we assist the growth of the tourism industry by helping our small businesses, residents, and partners enjoy the shared benefit of economic growth. We have almost 900 members, and it's fun to work with them and see them prosper in our community. I have just a few examples. One is the Columbus Food Adventures, run by Bethia Wolf. Since starting her business in 2010, there have been numerous new culinary tours around Columbus, and even launched Bethia even launched a sister company, Columbus Brew Adventures. Our tourism, membership, and marketing departments have worked very closely with Bethia to grow her market and her business, and she's become a big fan. With that, I would like to introduce Steve Weaver, who is part owner with his wife. I'll make sure I leave that in, of the Candle Lab. So he's going to share his story real quick.
Thank you, President Ginther, members of council. My name is Steve Weaver, and together along with my wife, we own the Candle Lab. We have three stores here in Central Ohio. We have Worthington, Grandview, and the Short North. And because we're in three different communities, we're members of all sorts of organizations, all the local chambers of commerce and the local convention visitors bureaus, the local business associations. But by a big margin, our investment in Experience Columbus and our partnership with them yields us by far the best marketing bang for our buck. They've been tremendous partners along the way. Not only do they go out and speak to groups and bring in groups that we wouldn't be able to reach on our own as merchants, but then they give us the tools that we need as a business to reach out to those groups and to make sure that they're coming into our stores and into our communities. It's been, when we first started it, we thought our candle pouring experience might be couples or groups of three or four. And as we have Experience Columbus has introduced us into on this market and brought us all of this business, we've had to go back and actually remodel two of our stores and redesign our newest store to take into account the bigger groups that they're bringing. So it's had an enormous effect on our business, on our neighboring merchants, and on our communities, and we're incredibly thankful for the partnership.
Thank you, Steve. So attractions, restaurants, tours, shops, businesses of all sizes thrive when we work together. We're proud to be a part of the team helping drive the spirit of collaboration forward. A healthy tourism economy increases the bed tax revenues, which help generate funds for the arts and human services. Thanks for your support and for passing our annual contract this evening.
The Franklin County Municipal Court is one of the busiest in the state and offers unique programming to rehabilitate certain low-level, nonviolent offenders and save taxpayer dollars along the way. City Council supports this mission by providing funding this year, $340,000, for the court's specialty docket program. The court has three programs, the solicitation program, the addiction program, and the military and veterans court program. Let's start with the solicitation program, or changing actions to change habits. The catch court, as it is commonly referred, promotes effective treatment as an alternative to incarceration for a person who has multiple solicitation arrests. Many of these individuals have a history of multiple drug arrests, drug addiction, poverty, and being victimized as a result of solicitation. Next is the addiction program for those who are hooked on drugs and deals with similar life circumstances as the solicitation court. And finally, helping those who wore our nation's uniforms, military and veteran specialty docket courts work to support those men and women who have suffered from drug addiction, poverty, and lack of community support. From the municipal court is Judge Ted Barrows.
Courts get bad publicity when they operate as speed traps, when they operate as revenue sources for their jurisdictions. Your municipal court is not like that, as you know, since you have to fund us each year. We don't return a profit to the city. We are proud, however, of the occasions when we are able to engage in restorative justice, when we are able to take people who have run afoul of the law and direct them in a better way for the betterment of themselves, their families, and their communities. This ordinance before you today represents part of that effort where we have created specialized dockets in our court. And I want to thank you for your support of this ordinance. Now, I've brought with me tonight to speak in a little bit more detail the director of our specialized docket, Ms. Andrea Boxall, who I think she has addressed you before. Ms. Boxall.
It's been interesting for me because I know that it has been a difficult role for many people to accept that the court is not a service provider, they're not a social service provider, they're not a treatment provider. But the reality is, this is where we're seeing many of the people that the minister, when he gave his prayer, talked about, the disenfranchised. A lot of them out of issues of poverty and other mitigating circumstances are committing crimes. That does not give them an excuse. In fact, I would suggest that all of our programs that we coordinate actually holds them accountable and provides them with tremendous support. In the past 10 years, I've been privileged to work with the entire Franklin County Municipal Court bench, but most prominently with Judge Vandekar as well as Judge Herbert. And as you're aware, our problem-solving court started with the mental health program docket 10 years ago. We've now expanded. We started the alcohol drug addiction program in 2009. That program serves people who voluntarily agree to enter into any of our programs with a new charge to say, you know what, I do keep getting caught, I do keep going to jail, but what I need is treatment and I want the help. They enter into the program, they commit to it for 2 years, they have to show up weekly, they're randomly tested. I'm very happy to say 68% of our clients have reduced in jail nights as well as an arrest, which while you were saving, we don't produce profit, we are able to show that we save funds for the city. The other program that we started, regrettably but out of necessity, is the opiate extension program. We've had to start a heroin docket. The reality is it's at an epidemic, if not endemic, rate in the city, in this county, and we are able to show you statistically. We take in about 250 clients per year. Unfortunately, only about 150 actually keep with us. We issue warrants immediately because this is not one of those things where we can let a pass go by. We've actually, regrettably, I have to say, in 10 years of running the mental health court, we had 6 individuals die, 5 of those people from natural causes. In 3 years of running the drug courts, we've actually had 16 people die, all of them from overdose. Most recently, it was actually a person who was a veteran. He died 2 weeks ago of an overdose. The other court that we started, and we were honored to have both Councilmember Craig as well as Councilmember Mills present, and Judge Barrows helped tremendously, is the Military and Veteran Service Docket. It's a very unique program. I think a lot of programs that you're going to come seeing out of the federal government are really focused on people who've strapped their boots in, they've put their boots to the ground. We don't only take those who have honorable discharge, but also those who have less than honorable as well as dishonorable, because we're finding those are the people who have a greater propensity to commit misdemeanor crimes. We've had tremendous success in that program, and we'll have our first graduation after 2 years in April. So, of course, you'll all be getting those emails, and your aides will be letting you know. The last program I'm going to speak about is probably the one that's also been near and dear to this city's heart, because I think we've had to change our understanding of what is typical of prostitution and solicitation. We consider these individuals victims of prostitution and solicitation, victims of human trafficking. I myself do the human trafficking questionnaire, which is administered by the Polaris Project, and I can tell you that the average age of any participant in our program of sexual abuse is 8.5. When I speak publicly, and I've been honored to speak in Europe and talk to their courts as well as the International Bar Conference, I can't look at an individual in the city of Columbus who is walking the streets and say, oh, well, there's a 40-year-old who's just trying to get by and make money and support her drug habit. I see an 8.5-year-old girl who's been victimized her entire life, who's been isolated, and is looking for an opportunity to say, I know I've messed up. I just need some help. And through this unique bench and this collaboration, not just with the city, but with the commissioners as well as private nonprofits who come forth and say, what can we do? The Changing Actions to Change Habits program will have its fourth graduation, and I'm proud of each one. I also would be remiss if I didn't mention that the reinvestment side of all of our programs, we work with the Reentry Commission, both with the mayor's office as well as with the Franklin County Commissioners and our own city attorney Pfeiffer's office, invested. and hired one of the graduates from one of our programs. And so if there's ever an opportunity to do that, I certainly encourage it.
The Community Crime Patrol works closely with the Columbus Division of Police to keep neighborhoods as safe as possible. Public Safety Committee Chair Zach M. Klein sponsored an ordinance to provide $400,000 for CCP activities. CCP's highly trained citizen patrollers increase safety in Columbus neighborhoods by deterring crime and assisting police in the apprehension of suspects. From the Community Crime Patrol is the group's executive director, Ellen Moore, followed by Safety Committee Chair Zach Klein.
It's always my pleasure to come and speak to you once again about Community Crime Patrol as we begin our 24th year of service to the residents of Columbus's neighborhoods. With the great support of this council in 2013, we worked a total of just under 50,000 hours in the University District, South Clintonville, Marion Village, German Village, Franklinton, the Hilltop, the Northland, North Linden area, and downtown. In November of last year, we added a new patrol site in the Old Town East Franklin Park neighborhood. During 2013, the patrollers played an integral part in the arrests of 10 persons, including a drunk driver, a robbery suspect, and two persons with active warrants. They recovered several missing children and reported six fires. They've assisted dozens of injured people, calling medics out at least 20 times this year, and nearly 7,000 people have been helped by the patrollers, either with car trouble, directions, or just exchanging information about what's going on in their neighborhoods. Our unique partnerships with city agencies continue. Through the 311 system, we've reported over 2,700 code violations and over 2,000 environmental issues, such as burned out streetlights and water leaks. We'll never know how many crimes we've deterred just by being a presence on the streets. We continue to strengthen our partnerships with the Columbus Division of Police, dozens of neighborhood block watch groups, civic associations, and area commissions. We applied for and were granted a new two-year stipend from the United Way to fund part of our patrol in the Northland, North Linden area, as well as a successful bid to retain our current United Way funding for the Franklinton area. Our minority recruiting efforts have been quite successful as well. Of the 42 people currently on staff, 27% are persons of color. Half the staff is either female or a person of color. I'm pleased to report that we have sent 43 former CCP employees to the Columbus Division of Police. I want to publicly thank the Division of Police for their support of CCP over the years. And their interaction with the patrollers is what makes this program unique and so successful in making these neighborhoods safer. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about one of the city's best assets.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Any questions about Community Crime Patrol? All right, thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
We do have one speaker, Trent Smith.
I just want to, on behalf of the Franklinton neighborhood, thank you for this funding of the Community Crime Patrol. As Ms. Moore has already stated, they are much more than just crime prevention, eyes and ears on the street. One of the things that I get asked most often when businesses or residents are talking to me about coming to the neighborhood is how safe is it? And I always bring up Community Crime Patrol being part of our neighborhood whenever I'm addressing those questions, because their very presence is a deterrent to most of the activity that we're dealing with in that neighborhood. And their relationship with the police department, I know, is good and getting better all the time. But I just wanted to point out one thing. She already kind of addressed it, but I looked at their most recent report for February 2014, and the call of the week was actually a call that happened in the Franklinton neighborhood where they were passing a house on Yale Avenue and smelled natural gas and called that in. And who knows, you know, what kind of damage could have been part of that situation had they not been there to actually realize the situation and realize that it was an abandoned house that had obviously had a problem going on. So they're not just about crime control. They're about the neighborhood itself and just kind of watching out for what's going on, whether it's illegal activity or not. So that's all I wanted to say. I'm glad that Ms. Moore was down here to give a much better explanation of their activities, but we in the Franklinton neighborhood are very appreciative of their efforts and your support.
We are out of time for this edition of Call the Roll. If you have a question or a comment, please email us at calltheroll@columbus.gov. That's calltheroll@columbus.gov. And don't forget, you can follow the Columbus City Council on our Facebook and our Twitter pages. You have been listening to an encore edition of Call the Roll, broadcast April 5th, 2014. The Columbus City Council continues its August recess. Its next regularly scheduled meeting will be September 8th of 2014. On behalf of the entire Columbus City Council, I'm your host, John Ivanek. Thanks for listening to Freedom FM, and have a great weekend.